Hello, this is Jonathan Mays, editor-in-chief of Restaurant Business, and in this week's episode of A Deeper Dive, I speak with Stephen Cohen, an attorney who specializes in real estate for restaurants and retailers. A lot of restaurants want to expand right now and are doing everything they can to do so, but the cost of expansion is higher than ever. Construction costs are up, interest rates are high, and lease rates are also high because of intense competition, not to mention the fact that sales and traffic are also uncertain at the moment. Stephen discusses these issues and talks about how companies can weigh the need to grow with the need to ensure that they don't wreck their unit economics over the long term. We also talk about what companies can do to remain competitive for good sites in a competitive market. Stephen talks about the biggest mistakes restaurants make with their real estate strategies. It is a real estate podcast this week on A Deeper Dive, so please check it out. All right, I'm here with Stephen Cohen. Stephen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm an attorney. I do real estate and business. My primary focus is on the restaurant industry and retail, on the leasing side and finance side. And I do just a ton of leases for restaurant independents and restaurant chains. And I've done all kinds of leases for street deals, for malls, for strip centers, for standalone ground leases. So I've kind of seen the full spectrum. I work nationally, so I've seen what's going on around the country, and also for the different kinds of restaurants, for the fast casuals, for the high-end dining, for the small to-go locations. So I've kind of seen the full spectrum of things, and it keeps me busy.
All right, good. One of the things I really wanted to ask you before we jump into the big topics is, where is the demand in the restaurant space highest for when it comes to real estate? Where is the market? Where is the market demand highest, and where is it the lowest right now from your perspective?
It's a little tricky because it's a little bit all over the place. There just hasn't been enough new development since COVID to keep up with demand. The demand is pretty much everywhere. Clearly, the malls have got some challenges that they have to deal with. But, street locations, outlots, strip centers, there's just not enough new product coming on the market for all the concepts that want to grow and take spaces there. So it's pretty tight all along. And as always, Jonathan, A space is A space and it'd be tough to get to, and the B's and C's locations might be a little bit easier. But clearly the battle for A locations is really tough right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, that leads into the topic, which is, there's a lot of uncertainty at the moment. Costs are, interest rates remain, relatively high. You have, a lot of opening costs, construction costs, whatnot, have remained considerably higher than they were a couple of years ago. And now essentially what you're saying is that if you're going to go and target a really good site, you're probably going to have to pay maybe a little bit more than you would prefer. So, and yet at the same time, we do have a lot of restaurant companies of all types, mostly quick service and fast casuals, but certainly, a number of casual dining chains as well, are looking to expand. They're either franchising very, very heavily and throwing out incentive after incentive after incentive, or they just, are just really pushing heavy growth. You got companies like Dutch Bros and even Starbucks are pushing a lot of unit growth. So, it just seems like this, in an environment like that, trying to meet your expansion goals with the real estate issues there are now and the cost issues is particularly challenging, is it not?
Oh, it's very challenging. And particularly for some of the franchisees who are under requirements and pressure from the franchisor to get their unit growth and match their requirements. They're under tremendous pressure. And for companies that have been around for a while and had a business plan for each of their locations, suddenly, construction costs are way up and food costs are up and labor's tough. So, everybody's got to rethink their business model. And that's putting a tremendous amount of pressure on them to make the economics work. So you match that up with, you know, some tough economics coming from the landlord side and from the leasing side, and it makes it very difficult to find locations that can work for you. And and they're under a lot of pressure. And then if you're a publicly held company, you're, you know, and you're dependent upon growth, then, you know, you got to keep your numbers up. And, you know, some companies that are private that have the luxury of stepping back a little bit and thinking, okay, let's wait and see what happens. You know, they can certainly stand still. But, you know, the development pipeline, you know, it takes a long time. So, you know, if you stop working on your deals now, it's going to be 2 years before you can get something open. So you kind of have to look to the future and think, okay, assuming everything works out, you know, what am I putting into my pipeline now for what's going to open next year and the year after?
Yeah. Well, the real challenge, I think, in a market like this, you know, like, I mean, it is unit economics, long-term unit economics. When you have to start making compromises from the get-go, and we've seen it time and again where, you know, companies with, you mentioned publicly traded companies, but maybe the bigger concern are those that get private equity dollars because they're looking for growth right now. Yep. Real fat, you know, and they want growth immediately so they can turn this thing over in 5 years or whatever. And the result of this, and we've had guests on the podcast this year talk about problems that they ran into when they made a compromise on their unit economics to get growth at the real estate level. So they sign leases, you know, they might sign a lease. It's really expensive today because you really, really want to get in that site. And then they end up paying the price down the line. You know, yeah. Eventually it can cause some problems. So how do you weigh the need for growth with trying to make sure that your site works for the long term?
That's the main question, the quintessential question there, Jonathan. And you have to drill down on that. You're not going to change the market. You're not going to change what's going on in the world. You're not going to change the economy. So the real question is, okay, what can I do about it? And there are definitely things that you can do that will mitigate your risks, will mitigate the risk of budget overruns, will help you on the timing standpoint so you can get your unit open. Also, you know, lock in deals that you can get done and signed. Landlords aren't going to sit around and wait for you to, you know, figure out whether you want to do the deal or not very long. So there are definitely things that you can do. And one of the main things I think is getting in there and doing your due diligence on a site really early. Get your contractors in there, get your engineers in there, find out what's going on with the HVAC, where's the grease trap, you know, where are the hoods, you know, what's it going to take to get this unit into a place where it's usable for you. I'm assuming we're, you know, talking about, you know, existing space that's being, you know, redone now, because that's mostly what you see. It's a little bit easier when it's new space because you get in, you know, you got a little bit more of a leeway. But, you know, getting in there and doing that due diligence up front, you know, while you're working on the deal, while you're working on the lease, is really quintessential because you can mitigate your risks for cost overruns, as I said. And also from a timing perspective, you know, it doesn't work to get your lease done and then go do your due diligence. Because guess what? You know, it's too late now. Now you've signed a lease and now all of a sudden you look at it and you realize that you don't have enough HVAC or your grease trap's too far away or, you know, whatever else about the site isn't going to work for you. So that's one thing you can do. The other thing I think that's really important is to have your team in place. You know, it's a coordinated effort of lawyers, project managers, architects, engineers, you know, you want your deal maker, you want all these people looking at the deal at the same time and really focusing on it so that you can get to a place really quickly where you understand whether this particular location and these particular economics can work for you. And the sooner you get that done, the faster you can get the deal done and the faster you can walk away from a deal is not going to work. And I've seen a lot of people spend a lot of time on deals and then they get 6 months, 3 months, 6 months into it. And then suddenly they realize the economics aren't going to work for them. And I think, well, you just wasted a lot of time. You spent a lot of your personnel resources on this deal when you could have been working on something else. So really important to have your team involved up front and have it coordinated. So they're not working in separate silos.
Yeah, it's you got to work quickly and early to get these things taken care of. Yeah. I mean, like it's, you have that team in place and make sure you're getting your work done well before you get that lease signed.
Yeah. And then what you can do to try to protect yourself build into your deal and into your lease whatever contingencies you might need. So certainly permit contingencies. And if there are things you need in the deal, like a drive-through or a patio or a rooftop or a liquor license, you know, all those things should be part of your contingencies that you negotiate right up front in the deal and you put them in the lease. And that way you're protecting yourself so that if you really run into a problem, you haven't committed yourself to something that's not going to work for you. And yeah. It's really important to get those contingencies negotiated up front in your deal because, you know, once you get a deal sheet done, you get a lease and then you try putting in the lease, the landlords are going to be like, nah, you know, we didn't talk about that. We talked about when your rent starts. So, you know, getting those contingencies in there, they have to be realistic. You know, nobody's going to let you keep a place locked up, a location locked up for a year while you decide whether you can do it or not. But, you know, if you have your team working on it and you think you need 30 or 60 days, you should build that right into your deal.
Mm-hmm. You got to, I mean, one of the issues is because the market is so competitive right now, you as an operator have to have all this stuff in place, but you're going to have to do all of this relatively quickly. You're going to have to do a lot of work. I mean, you're going to have to be prepared pretty much fast because the fact of the matter is, especially if you're trying to get a drive-through site, for instance, just to throw that out there, you're probably going to have more than one competitor for that site. And there, you know, and there's a pretty good chance that that competitor is going to be pushing pretty hard to get that thing done.
Yeah. And again, that goes back to, you know, how are you structured internally with your team? You know, do you have regular development meetings? Who goes to the development meetings? You know, are your personnel able to focus on all the deals you're working on? You know, sometimes I've seen companies that they run too thin and they're saving on their overhead, but they can't get their architects out to the site for a month or 2 months. And, you know, meanwhile, you know, you don't know if you can get the driver or not. You haven't talked to the city yet. You haven't done your due diligence yet. So the better you can, you know, if you can take some upfront time to structure your development team and to structure your process, so the due diligence is happening, the decision-making is happening, and the deal makers are in touch with all those pieces of it, that's going to streamline your process. And the landlords, you know, I've seen them, they grow impatient really quick. You know, they got people in line for your location. You can't sit around and say, well, I'm going to get my engineer out there next month and we'll see. It's like, yeah, no, I'm not doing that. Landlords are, you know, they've got the next guy in line who's ready to go. And there are guys, yeah. Jonathan, who are ready to go without their due diligence. So just sign the lease, you know, and landlords don't care. They'll take it. So, you know, it's really important to be able to move efficiently and quickly.
Are they, shouldn't landlords maybe be a little bit more choosy about who goes into their sites or are they?
I think they are. I think they're looking very carefully at, well, certainly they're looking at credit, which they've always done, but they're also looking at, you know, how real is this deal? How quickly are you going to be able to move? And, you know, you have the same conversation all the time about permit contingencies. The landlord just wants to know, when does my rent start? I understand there's a drawing time. I understand there's a permitting time. I understand there's a build out time, but there's got to be some hard date where I know my rent's going to start. And, you know, if from a tenant's perspective, you push that out too far and you drag out the leasing process, the landlords get frustrated really fast, particularly when they have somebody in line who looks like they can move faster than you. So they're looking at use. They definitely want the use that has synergies with their center. And of course, they're looking at credit, but they're also looking at, you know, are you going to get this deal done or not? You know, are you going to sit there and drag this out for 6 months of negotiation? Or are you going to sign something? And I don't blame them. I mean, you know, it's their market right now.
Yeah. Do you see any evidence? Like, do we see evidence that restaurants are starting to get a little creative? At least my thought is, you know, restaurants definitely want to get more of these deals done. They want to get, you know, they do want to expand. Are you seeing any evidence that they're rethinking, you know, the sites that they go into or anything like that? Or what they're building?
You know, it's a good question. I haven't seen a lot of that. I mean, certainly from the franchisee standpoint, they're pretty boxed into what they can do. And they're pretty boxed into their size and they're pretty boxed into, you know, whether they need a drive-in. You know, I think the flexibility you see sometimes is companies that are able to do a build-to-suit or be able to do a ground lease. You know, they can structure different kinds of deals. And if you have that kind of flexibility, then, you know, you're going to be able to take some sites that other people don't. won't be able to take if they don't have that kind of flexibility. So really, the flexibility is the kind of deal you do. So there's some of that. But I think location-wise, I don't see restaurants really taking big risks and going outside their, you know, their comfort zone and what's really going to work for them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we do see on the brand level, we definitely see some brands that have rethought how they rethought some of their prototypes and their designs to at least take some cost out or to make things a little bit more palatable. We do see a lot more flexibility.
You definitely see some of that.
Usually a restaurant company now that is inflexible with their prototype is probably fighting a losing battle. Because you've got to have at least multiple options, don't you?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think that pulling costs out is important. Rethinking your footprint is really important. Thinking about your design that everybody's in love with because it's their brand, but you know, are there ways that you can cut corners on your costs and not sacrifice your brand? I think most companies are looking at that. And, you know, most companies are pretty good about skinning it down to what they absolutely need. So there's not a lot of margin there. There's not very few companies that I see that are just, you know, spending money left and right where they don't need to. They're definitely looking at that. And there's a fine line there, Jonathan. At some point, you take too much out where you lose your brand, right? And you lose your concept and people... it's indefinable. You can't put your finger on where that is. But clearly, it's just like raising costs on your menu, right? Raising your prices. You know, there's some tolerance for some of that, but at some point you go over the top and you've pushed too far. And that's just a really nuanced decision-making process for companies. It's tough. I mean, that's really where you see, the separation from good and bad. Good companies figure out exactly how much they can push their menu prices. They figure out what they can take out of their brand or take out of their development without sacrificing their concept. And if you go too far on either of those, you know, you're maybe short term, you got a good deal, but long term, I think you're hurting your brand significantly.
Yeah, probably a perfect example of that would be you have a lot of companies that say, all right, we're going to make our prototype more efficient and cheaper for franchisees to open it. And essentially they focus purely on, all right, we're only going to, the only thing that's going to be redesigned is the customer facing stuff. And we're not going to worry about the non-customer facing stuff, for instance, usually one of the big delineators. The fact of the matter is, though, that especially today, to get employees and keep them, they actually want to work in newer, nicer facilities, and they really would prefer not to work in a dated facility. And that includes what is in the back of the house, what's behind the curtain, so to speak. So you do actually have to, in your redesign, take into account not only how that restaurant looks for the customer, but for prospective employees, because that's, if they see, hey, this nice place out front, but then they go in the back and it's garbage, probably not going to, they're going to go to the next place that's a little fancier.
Yeah, particularly in a tight labor market, it's really important. You can take it's just like anything else. You can push it a little bit, but you do have to be mindful of the fact that you push it too hard and nobody's going to want to work in your kitchen. So you have to pay attention to that. And years ago when I was at when I was general counsel for Rainforest Cafe, and we were trying to take costs out of our build out, and God knows Rainforest Cafe was those were expensive to build. And we would have discussions, we had those animatronic animals that would move, and we'd have discussions. So if we take the gorillas out, are we going to serve any less food? Is, people going to buy less hamburgers because there's not a gorilla there in the dining room? And again, the answer is, no, it's going to be fine if you take one thing out. But if you start, taking everything out, at some point you don't have your branding. That's true in the front of the house, and it's true in the back of the house too. In the back of the house, you can cut some corners and you can, but if you make it too difficult to work back there, then you're going to create a problem on your labor side.
Yeah. I mean, you could ask the question of whether it makes some sense to start a concept that depends on guerrilla count for your long-term sales goals. But if you're going to do that, you had better make sure that that's, you're going to have to live with the fact that you're going to have an expensive build out because, you know, you need a certain number of guerrillas,
right,
or whatever.
Right. You know, yeah. And now with construction costs going up, everybody's got to rethink those formulas.
Yeah. So I guess real quick, I guess the last third of this, I want to talk a little bit about what do you think are the biggest mistakes that companies make in their real estate strategies? What do you think are some of the biggest mistakes they make?
Well, not to beat a dead horse, but definitely not doing your due diligence is huge. I think a lot of folks don't spend enough time really digging into their work letter. The work letter is really important. And if you, particularly if the landlord's going to do some of the work for you, you know, where does the landlord work end and where's your start? And, you know, people don't spend enough time on that because that's a huge budget item on your build out. So I'd say one of the big places is not doing enough work on your work letter and doing that upfront, as part of your, it should be negotiated and be part of your LOI, you know, way before you ever get to your lease. And, you know, make sure your contract, your project manager, or your architect, or whoever your contractor, whoever you're working with has really dug into that. And honestly, those guys, they don't like to do that. You know, they'd rather be out there building and banging nails. You know, they don't really want to look at, I mean, us lawyers we're trained to read leases and to negotiate them. But, you know, project managers and contractors, they don't love reading their work letter. You know, that's not really what they love to do. But I think you need to force that on them because that's a huge budget item that has a huge swing one way or the other if you know really pay attention to that or not. So I would definitely say that's a big one. The other one I think is to really spend some good time on your LOI to really negotiate those points that are important to you. Because, you know, when you get to the lease and suddenly you're bringing up issues like, well, I need a contingency for my drive-through or I need a contingency for my patio, and you hadn't talked about that in the LOI, it doesn't go down well with the landlord, and it's harder to get. I used to talk about my 5-to-1 rule, which is, you know, for every my 1-to-5 rule, for every hour that you spend on your LOI, you save 5 hours on a lease. So, you know, it really pays to spend time on your LOI and to have your lawyer involved in it and your architect or contractor involved in it too. So that's kind of the upfront work that's really worthwhile. And it will speed along the lease process significantly if you've done that. And, you know, I see LOIs all kinds. I see the 1-pager, I see the 10-pager. And, you know, the more time that has been spent on the LOI and the more better it's negotiated, so much the lease process can go so much faster. And then as part of that, you have to really think of what are the critical points to me? What do I really need in this LOI? Do I need an exclusive? And what is exclusive going to look like? You know, do I need a contingency? What that's going to look like? Am I thinking about my exit strategies, my assignment clauses, my, you know, continuous operations, you know, all those issues? If they're really important to you, get it into your LOI. The whole process will go a lot smoother if you do that. So that's huge. You know, other mistakes that I've seen, I think it's getting bogged down in issues on the lease where there's not a efficient decision-making process. So we go through the lease, we've come up with 15 open issues. The deal maker takes it back to his real estate committee that meets once every 2 weeks. He doesn't get a good answer. Then we got another 2 weeks. You know, you start getting deal fatigue. So, you know, having a streamlined decision-making process, or a place where you can go, where the deal maker can go and get decisions made on the business points is huge. And then on the flip side, you know, I think the other big mistake I see is people who don't spend enough time on their leases, period. You know, I know it's hard when you're a restaurateur, you'd rather spend your money on fancy lighting or, you know, or good wine or whatever it is you're going to bring into your location. And it's sometimes hard to justify spending the money on your legal fees to have the lease negotiated. And then they, you know, I've gotten the call. It's like, oh, Stephen, I know I should have called you. I know I should have called you before I signed the lease, but now I got this problem. And it's like, yeah, well, you know, we'll do what we can. But, you know, you raced into it. You signed the lease without really doing your homework. And now you got a problem.
Mm-hmm. So if I have to sum everything up, you got to head into your real estate strategy sort of like a scout. Like you got to be prepared. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think, you know, the more prepared you are, the more your systems are in place and your processes in place, you know, then you can be a well-oiled, watching a good well-oiled development team work is it's a beautiful thing. And, you know, not everybody has the luxury of having all those team members, but somebody's going to be in charge of it. Whether it's the CEO or it's your real estate guy or somebody, you know, make sure they're paying attention to all those parts of it because they all work together and the synergy is really important.
All right. Stephen, this was fantastic. I really appreciate you joining me this week on the podcast.
Well, thanks for having me, Jonathan. Always good to talk to you.
And that should do it for this week's episode of A Deeper Dive, which was edited, as always, by Spoons. Artwork by Nico Hines. You may find this and other episodes of the podcast on our website at www.restaurantbusinessonline.com/article/deeper-dive. And you may subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. I'm Jonathan Mays, your host, podcast producer, and the editor-in-chief of Restaurant Business. Thank you for listening.